Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
I feel like it would be my obligation, too, to fight for the country. Even if I'm Puerto Rico, you know, I'm an American, too.
I was very glad that Puerto Ricans were on my side. I would not want them to come after me with a bayonet.
Almost 95% casualties.
Lo estaba llevando a una masacre. Y por eso yo me negué.
These become the largest mass court-martials of the Korean War.
There was a stigma in the history of the U.S. Army.
With meritorious service to country since 1899, with honors, decorations, and tributes, the Borinqueneers' toughest fight would not be on the battlefield.
Adiós, noviecita del alma, vengo a despedirme.
Shortly after the United States acquired Puerto Rico in the Spanish-American War, they created the 65th Regiment, the Army's only all-Hispanic unit, which fought valiantly, even though its American citizen soldiers could not vote for president and were not represented in Congress. They called themselves the Borinqueneers. More than 43,000 people from the island of Puerto Rico served in Korea. 3,540 of them died. In the words of a national public radio reporter, the Korean War turned out to be both the 65th's most glorious achievement and its darkest episode. The regiment was exposed to some of the fiercest penalties of the war, and many of its troops were court-martialed after a hopeless campaign to take a hill. The action led to widespread protests on Puerto Rico, and 6 months later, the court-martials were reversed. In 2014, almost 60 years later, the Borinqueneers were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan said, "It takes a certain caliber of men to fight for a country that discriminates against you." I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests on this Veterans Day edition of Route 51 are surviving members of the 65th Regiment. Joining us by phone, Sergeant Major Victor Lopez Nieves, and here in the studio, Cesar Antonio Pabon Perez. Also with us today, Noemi Figueroa Soule, producer, director, and writer of the documentary film, The Borinqueneers. And we'll hear from Colin Hansen, the Edgar Elementary School teacher who directs the school history project, A Walk in Their Shoes, which brought our guests to central Wisconsin. We'd also like to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. If you feel you can add to the conversation, that's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, wpr.org/Route 51, and I will read it live on the air. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here. And Victor, thank you for joining us from your hospital bed in San Antonio. I hope you're recovering well.
I'm out of the hospital. Thank you, anyway.
So you are recovering well. You're out of the hospital. And are you back home now?
I'm back home, yes.
Well, good for you. Noemi, thank you so much. I saw the documentary. It's a really impressive film that you put together. I know you worked really hard at it. And Cesar, it's great to have you here in the studio with us today.
Thank you very much.
Colin, you're an educator at Edgar Elementary School. Tell us a little bit about A Walk in Their Shoes and what you're trying to accomplish with it.
Well, it's my passion and my belief in education is that when you read something in a textbook, if you can find somebody that's been there to give that personal or firsthand account, it brings the education to life. And this is not in our textbook. So this is a story that needs to be told firsthand and to people who did the research like Noemi has done.
How did you get connected with all of these amazing people with these direct ties to history that you bring to North Central Wisconsin on a regular basis?
Well, I stumbled upon the documentary, and then after watching it, I did some more Google work and found contact information for Noemi, and then we've been talking for many months, if not a year, and she led me to Cesar and Victor and other possibilities of Borinqueneers to come to Central Wisconsin.
And how do the students and the people in the community respond when you bring folks like this in? Because this isn't the first time you've done it.
No, it hasn't. And I think it's – I don't want to say it's an expected opportunity, but the kids are looking forward to it. The kids are talking to the teachers about what's going to – what events are we going to see this year? And yesterday they were at John Muir and Horace Mann, and the students were well behaved. Last night here at UWMC, a great crowd that came out to watch the film and ask questions and have conversations.
And this again, yes, Cesar?
No.
All right. Colin, this again was another in a series of very special Veterans Day programs. It's something that you do every year. Tell us why you think it's so vitally important to expose today's young people firsthand to these veterans, these soldiers, and these heroes while they're still around.
Well, I think it comes best in an article that Noemi was quoted in, is that when these veterans are gone and when she is gone, her film will still be here. But they're not gone yet. And so we need to hear their stories. We need to pay tribute. We need to applaud their service and sacrifice, their courage, their bravery. And even in the situations of segregation and discrimination, we need to learn from these stories so it doesn't happen again.
And Noemi, that's really the purpose of the documentary you put together.
Well, yes, but also that many people have never even heard of them, including myself. I mean, I was born in Puerto Rico, but I was raised in New York. And my original idea was just to document the experience of the Puerto Rican soldier through all the wars they've participated in. I really stumbled into the story of the 65th, and I was shocked that I had never heard about them. And that is the common reaction. That was the reaction last night when I asked, by a show of hands, how many people here had ever heard of the 65th before today, that evening rather. And one person raised their hand who happened to be probably the only Puerto Rican family that lives in Wausau. She had heard of them. But nobody else had. And I think that's a shame. I really do.
Cesar, you grew up in Puerto Rico. You served in the 65th Regiment, and now you live in Milwaukee, so not so far for you to travel to Wausau. What's your reaction to the reception you received last night here in Wausau?
Yeah, I'm so excited, and also how the people treat me after we finished the program. Everybody embracing me, shaking hands. That was wonderful. And two of them... A couple, they were Puerto Ricans, and they were talking to me in Spanish. They stayed there until we finished.
Mm-hmm. And Victor, you're recovering from an illness. We know you wanted to be here in person. We are very happy to have you here on the phone. But why do you think it's important for young people to know the story of the 65th?
It is really very important, as Noemi indicated. They just didn't know about Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has come into the news, in the middle of the news, because of the storm lately. But the Puerto Ricans has been around in the military for many, 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 many years. And Puerto Rico has been a part of the United States, since 1898. And, and even though we are American citizens, but not too many people within the country, within the United States, really, really know or knew about the Puerto Rican soldiers and their contribution to this country. So I consider that to be very, very important that they really know that we are part of this great country. That we have given up, blood and lives in defense of this country for many years. And that must be known by all.
No, Noemi, you worked 9 years on this documentary, and you told me that if you include fundraising, it's more like 18 years?
No, I began working on the film in 1999, and it took me 9 years to raise the money. But in 2007, it was finally aired on PBS for 3 years, and it was aired on the Armed Forces Network to our 850,000 troops overseas. So since then, I've been having screenings and traveling around the country, and this is the 10th year anniversary that the film came out, and there's still a lot of interest. And there's also a lot of the ripple effect. Mm-hmm. Since the film came out, more and more people now have learned about the 65th. So you have a lot of communities finally recognizing the veterans and naming parks and streets after them, you know, putting up monuments and plaques. And, of course, a couple of very major important things that have happened. And the most recent is the awarding of the Congressional Gold Medal, which is a civilian award.
Now, the documentary won multiple awards, and you're obviously trying to in producing it, you wanted people to learn about the Barrinconeers. Do you think you're making headways? Do you think you made some headway yesterday in central Wisconsin?
I do, but you know something? The last thing that I could have imagined way back when I started this thing and I went through days of tears because I would get rejected for funding. I didn't know how I was going to be able to get the money to finish this film. The last thing I would have imagined was getting the Congressional Gold Medal for the regiment.
Do you think your documentary had something to do with
absolutely.
That?
It was a grassroots campaign organized by individuals and organizations across this country. But I really feel that one of the ripple effects was that the film educated people about their existence and also the fact that they had been the only segregated military unit that had not gotten the medal. They had – the Tuskegee Airmen had gotten it, the Navajo Cold Talkers, the Japanese-American Nisei, the Montfort Point Marines, which were the first African-American Marines, and not the 65th.
Now, the history of the 65th goes back almost immediately after Puerto Rico became a U.S. territory or a colony. Why was the unit formed? What was the reason for it?
The original intent was Native troops to safeguard the island. You know, immediately when the U.S. took possession, they wanted – many of the soldiers that they, got involved were Spanish soldiers that had served in the military, you know, or Puerto Ricans under the Spanish army, you know. And so so there were four companies of 100 men each, and then they started growing it and growing it. They started then traveling to some of the other Caribbean islands. World War I, they were sent to guard the Panama Canal.
Well, Puerto Rico was of strategic importance.
Absolutely.
Back at the turn of the last century.
Yes.
So it made sense to put that kind of a force together, Cesar.
Puerto Rico was very important since the beginning of the Spanish War because all the soldiers that they hired, they were Puerto Rican. But also, later, they brought more units around the island. Puerto Rico became a military base because they were in about 11 different cities, including Vieques, that they have military defense.
Now, I understand during World War I, the 65th primarily
guard duty in Panama Canal.
The Panama Canal and stayed in the Caribbean. But they did serve overseas in World War II.
They did, but not necessarily in offensive attacks. They were assigned to – well, the regiment was dispersed. The three battalions were dispersed. The 3rd Battalion, was sent to the Maritime Alps Franco-Italian border, and they were just there to – preserve the right flank of another unit. But they encountered skirmishes there. They lost a regimental commander who was killed, and they had some casualties. That was the only combat onto Korea.
Korea is a big one. We're going to be talking a lot about that in this show. And, Victor, the 65th was a huge point of pride for the island of Puerto Rico. Stories of the soldiers filled newspapers daily, particularly during the Korean War. The men received grand welcome home parades and some extravagant send-offs. How important, Victor, was the 65th to the identity of the Puerto Rican island?
It was very, very important. It was the pride of the island. The 65th was composed primarily of young people out of the countryside. At the time of the Korean War, that was the 50s, you know, this country was recovering from the Depression. So when you consider that the Depression years in the U.S., in the mainland, was bad, you look at Puerto Rico, you can multiply that by one or two times, it was just worse in Puerto Rico. So when the Korean War broke out, thousands of Puerto Ricans, you know, volunteered to join the military. And that became a very important issue in the island.
Victor,
I was one of them. I was just 21 years old. I was drafted. I wasn't ready to volunteer, but I was drafted. And that's when really, really the regiment and combat team got to show the rest of the world that the Puerto Rican soldier was as good as anywhere.
Cesar, why was it important for you to be part of the 65th?
Oh, that was that time great because my family, they were very poor. And then it started getting, you know, every month $120 and plus the money that I was making. At the same time, for me, it was important because I was doing something, you know, for my country.
And Puerto Rico is a relatively small place, about 2 million people living on the island. So you knew a lot of the people that you were serving next to. Is that correct?
Right, so yeah. Especially the Company A, I had some, they were my friends. And then I was in the National Guard before, and that was from my hometown. I met, you know, a lot of people, a lot of soldiers.
Let's listen to the audio of a short clip from the documentary, which gives you a hint of some of the discrimination that characterized the Army during the post-World War II years and how the 65th led the way as really the first unit, one of the first units that was desegregated.
In 1949, President Truman had signed a bill ordering the integration of the armed forces, but this change had not yet been implemented by the start of the Korean conflict. However, in the 65th, the relaxed segregation policy practiced in Puerto Rico already had white, black, and mestizo soldiers serving together.
When the 65th arrived, the commanding general went over and he looked at the troops. He told Colonel Harris, "I don't trust these troops. They are colored. Colored are not reliable troops." Colonel Harris told him, "You don't know what we are talking about. These are not colored troops. These are Puerto Ricans. And as far as their quality as soldiers," they told him, "they are real troopers," and they will show it.
Noemi, you were not a filmmaker by trade originally. What inspired you to take up this project and create this feature-length film?
My midlife crisis, that's what I call it. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I was a first-time filmmaker. I did have a little producing experience. I was 17 years as a professional actress, and I was also a freelance advertising consultant. So I would do translation of commercials and do producing and casting of radio and TV commercials. But that was the only producing experience I had.
What did you learn that you hadn't expected when you were putting the film together, and what challenges did you face?
I had preconceived ideas. I grew up in New York in the 70s, you know, the Young Lords movement, you know, and I was thinking originally, oh, my God, these men, they probably went against their will. They were drafted. They were forced to go. And the enlightening thing, and I think is a generational thing, is that many of them were very patriotic. And they felt it was their duty to go, and they went willingly. And there were some that maybe were not too anxious to go or had political beliefs that we felt they shouldn't have to go, but many did anyway. I mean, they would have been jailed, you know, if they hadn't gone, just like anyone here who would not go and serve if they're called to duty. But the majority of them were very patriotic and about not only Puerto Rico, but about feeling like they were U.S. citizens doing their duty.
They're U.S. citizens, but they can't vote for president. They're not represented in Congress, so they're not full U.S. citizens.
Yes.
Like
second
the people
class,
in the mainland.
Second-class citizens.
Cesar, why did you want to fight for a country that wouldn't even allow you to vote for president or a representative in Congress?
Well, in that time when I was young, I was involved in some people that are protesting against the United States on the way that they treat us. But then later, when I had the opportunity to show who we are, that's the reason I joined the Army.
Victor, same question to you. Why did you feel it was important for you to fight for a country that treated you as a second-class citizen? You couldn't vote for president. You couldn't vote for Congress. You couldn't vote for the people that were determining the conflicts that you might be involved in and that might cost you your life.
That is correct. You know, I had no idea. You know, you got to think, you know, I come from the sticks. I come from the mountain. I have no idea what I was getting involved with. At the age of 20 years old, I was already up in the mountains teaching my first year. At 20 years, I was teaching the kids out on the mountains when I was drafted. I had no idea what was it, you know, I was getting involved with. And I went through with tremendous and horrific type experiences, but it didn't register with me because, you know, maybe I was dumb. You know, young people full of life, when they come in the military at that time in the 1950s, we had no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. And it was later, after the war, and after I became a sergeant major at the age of 21, 22, that I realized, you know, what was happening in my life. And how proud I became to represent the island and to be part of the United States, finally being recognized as a citizen of this great country.
Noemi, you were born in Puerto Rico, but you grew up in Spanish Harlem, so you have both experiences. How do you feel about the fact that Puerto Ricans are described by our government as American citizens, but they don't have the same rights as Americans on the mainland? Should they be allowed to vote for president? Should they be allowed to vote for Congress? Should they be a state?
Well, you're asking me very good questions. But when I started this film, I decided that I was not going to reveal my own political beliefs because I did not want to make this film political, even though anything, any subject matter regarding Puerto Rico becomes political. I really wanted, my focus was just to show from their point of view, their story, and to recognize them, no matter what political position you stood for, whether it was independence for Puerto Rico, statehood, or Commonwealth. I like to believe that I was neutral as much as possible, and each person needs to make up their own decision about how they feel.
All right. Fair enough. Colin, we're going to let you go. We've been listening to our guests for the last few minutes. Another great program that you brought into Central Wisconsin. What's next for A Walk in Their Shoes? What are you working on now?
Well, very excited. March, we are going to have Sharon Robinson, daughter of Jackie Robinson. She will be in Central Wisconsin March 12th and 13th. There'll be a presentation at the Grand Theater on March 13th, that Tuesday night.
All right. Very good. Colin, another great one.
Well, thank you again, and thank you, Wisconsin Public Radio, for your support.
Today on Route 51, it's a special Veterans Day show with the Barrinconeers, the all-Hispanic infantry unit from the Korean War. Our guests today are Sergeant Major Victor Lopez Nieves and Cesar Antonio Pabon Perez, veterans of the U.S. Army 65th Infantry Regiment, and also Noemi Figueroa Soule, the producer, director, and writer of the documentary film The Barrinconeers. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 or put a comment on the Route 51 webpage. That's WPR.org/Route51. We're going to take a short break. Here's a song that's been called a second Puerto Rican national anthem by Noel Estrada.
Yo ya me voy, pero un día volveré a buscar mi querer, a soñar otra vez en mi viejo San Juan.
Wait, wait, don't tell me. Central Time. These programs and many more are possible thanks to listener support. You can learn about WPR programs, schedules, and so much more at WPR.org. Thank you. Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Vengo a decirle adiós a los muchachos, porque pronto me voy para la guerra. Que aunque vaya a pelear en otra tierra, voy a salvar mi derecho, mi patria y mi fe.
Daniel Santos with a song that was popular during the Korean War in Puerto Rico, taking us into our next segment of Route 51 as we continue taking a walk in their shoes with the Barrinconeers, the all-Hispanic infantry unit from the Korean War. I'm Glenn Moberg with our guests, Sergeant Major Victor Lopez Nieves and Cesar Antonio Pabon Perez, veterans of the U.S. Army 65th, and also Noemi Figueroa Soule, the producer, director, and writer of the documentary The Barrinconeers. And our guests were singing along with that, with that piece of music during the break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. The 65th began to really participate in combat missions, Noemi, in the Korean War. One of the first things that they had to deal with was the evacuation from the Chosun Reservoir. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, that's one of their most important assignments. That was in December of 1950, and the Marines were surrounded and outnumbered. The Chinese had gotten involved in the Korean War. There were many, many Marines that were getting killed and slaughtered. And the 65th was one of the first units in the frozen ridgetops that helped them open a path so that they could withdraw. And also they helped in the evacuation of the to the Hungnam port. They were one of the last units to board the ships to leave Hungnam.
Cesar, where were you stationed in Korea?
I went from Puerto Rico to Incheon. And then from Incheon we landed at 3 o'clock in the morning in 1951. That was early August. There they sent us to Seoul. Then in Seoul, they assigned me to the Company A of the 65th Infantry.
And you were you're from Puerto Rico, tropical climate, mm-hmm. and here you are fighting in frigid terrain. It could get down to 20 below zero in Korea. How difficult was it for the men to make that adjustment?
Well, for me, it was the first time at the same time, but the clothes that we had, you know, and also the socks that we have problem with people. We have frozen legs and everything. But, you know, we had to face because we couldn't say no, and we were in the front. We had a sleeping bag to sleep there for 2 hours. But then later we had to take it out and go in the trenches, you know, in front of the enemy. Was hard, was for everybody, but I was lucky because the first time that I had to face the enemy, it was in a patrol, and that was recognition patrol, and it wasn't that good, you know, that was hard. And also we lost some people, you know, that they had frozen legs, and that was terrible at the beginning of that year, 1951.
Victor, you're joining us from San Antonio, but if you were here in Wisconsin, I think the weather today might have reminded you a little bit of what you had to face in Korea.
Definitely. It was cold. I mean, extremely cold. And the Puerto Ricans, when I got there, we didn't have winter clothing.
Yeah.
Winter clothing came in on a later date. I remember waking up one morning, and there was ice on top of everything where I was. So that was That was a first for me. I have never experienced anything like that. I've never seen anything like that. So it was very difficult. But one thing about the Puerto Ricans, we all spoke the same language. We all knew what we needed to do. We really helped each other. We really learned how to dig in real quick and try to protect ourselves. But it was very difficult for us initially because when we got there, you know, it was total turmoil. We didn't know where the Chinese or the North Koreans were. They were in front of us or they were behind us. There was not a established line because the Chinese penetrated through the mountains. They forced the 1st Marine Division. They caught it in the middle, and they were about to be destroyed. And that's when the 65th, you know, was brought in, you know, to hold the mountains until the 1st Marine Division escaped the trap of about 260,000 Chinese troops. So we managed to survive. We adjusted. And thanks God, most of us survived a very difficult experience.
Cesar, you were involved with destroying a bridge.
Yeah.
With a truck full of enemy soldiers, they were crossing. Tell us about that. Tell us about that experience.
Well, Sergeant Suchet, he was my sergeant. He asked me because I was a rifle man, but also was a 57 recoil rifle gunner. He sent me with my assistant, Jorgito, to blow up the bridge. He gave me all the instructions, but for us, when we get there, it was fine. But once we hit the bridge and the truck, when we heard the voices of that people falling down the river screaming, Jorgito disappeared. And I was there.
you blew up the truck and the bridge, and people fell into the river screaming.
Yeah, screaming.
And then the person who instructed you disappeared.
That was my assistant.
Your assistant did.
The one that put the bullets in the rifle. He disappeared. But the sergeant said, Cesar, we have to get out of here. Then the mortars, they put what they call a fire for effect, a lot of mortars shooting around us. And we were rolling down the hill because that was a lot of snow. Then we were checking and finding out where Jorgito went. Then a week that we went to rest and change clothes in the back of the hill, we found Jorgito giving the communion together with the priest. Well, that he was he told me that he was so nervous when he heard the people screaming that he didn't want to stay there.
War is not a pleasant thing, is it?
Yeah.
43,000 people from the island of Puerto Rico served in Korea. And, Noemi, you were telling me that the actual number of Puerto Ricans is higher than that.
It was 61,000 because that included 18,000 that were drafted or volunteered from the main U.S. mainland. It wasn't 3,500 that were killed. It was 3,500 casualties. Casualties includes wounded and killed for all of Puerto Rico. So for the 65th specifically, there were about 825, I think, according to my list, that were Puerto Ricans that were killed. But from the 65th, it was 600, and 500 of those 600 were Puerto Ricans. The others were Continentals assigned to the 65th, like the officers. And when the 65th was integrated in March of 1953, then there were Continentals serving in the 65th, so then there was some casualties from that time period.
And the Puerto Ricans who were serving developed a reputation as fierce, dedicated fighting men. Let's listen to another clip from the movie The Brinconeers.
We soldiers of the 65th, we fought for freedom. And people died for the same reason.
The Korean War was the bloodiest war in Puerto Rico's military history. The island had sent 61,000 of its own to fight in Korea, twice as many men than the U.S. as a whole in proportion to its small population. By the end of the war, Puerto Rico had suffered more deaths than most states in the U.S. One out of every 42 casualties, wounded or killed, was a Puerto Rican. Hundreds of lives cut short, thousands of families affected. Puerto Ricans continue to serve in the military today at higher rates and suffer casualties often at levels disproportionate to their numbers.
I had served with a great outfit in World War II, the Mirical Division, which was second to none. We had all kind of records there. And I put three tours in Vietnam with some of the better units, but my service with the 65th was outstanding.
I was very proud to be a company commander in the 65th. One of the, it's the sort of the high point of my life.
I would like the American people to realize that we did our share in this Korean War.
That's a clip from the documentary The Barriconeers, produced by one of our guests on Route 51 today, Noemi Figueroa Soule. Noemi, they fought so hard and with so much valor, and yet they were in a position of having to prove themselves because of attitudes about their ethnic origin.
Well, even today, I remember that when it was shown on the Armed Forces Network, I got an email from a Puerto Rican soldier stationed in Afghanistan. And he was there with a group from Puerto Rico. And he said that they were having fights and problems with a unit from a state in the United States, questioning their citizenship, you know, questioning, I guess, why they're even involved. And what they did was they showed the film to them because it was being shown in the Armed Forces Network. And that opened made a big change. Their attitude changed towards them. They became friends because they realized that they're U.S. citizens. They're U.S. Army soldiers. They're part of this country, and they've contributed to this country.
The documentary describes Cartagena, a soldier who caught hand grenades in midair and threw them back. And he was the most decorated soldier of the 65th.
They called him one-man army. They used to call him one-man army.
And then
I would like to also mention Victor lost a cousin killed in combat in the Korean War who served in the 65th.
Victor, tell us about that.
Yes, this was a dear friend, almost a brother. My cousin, my last name is Lopez Nieves. His last name is Nieves Lopez, so that means we carry the same blood. He came after me, and when I left, you know, I call him up, you know, he was up in the line, and we said goodbyes. And a month later, 2 months later, you know, the Chinese took over the position where they were at, and he was caught behind, and he was shot 5 times. And then the artillery came in, and they destroyed the position where he was at. So he spent 3 days under the bunker that has been destroyed. So the Americans recovered the position 3 days later. This was during the winter time, and he was still alive at that time. And he survived. He survived, and he managed to get back to the state, but as a result of his wounds and all the damage that he suffered, he died at a later date.
Okay. The battles of Kelly Hill and Jackson Heights happened within a few weeks of each other. These battles are a point of pride, but also a point of controversy. In Kelly Hill, it was attacked 4 times by the 65th. There were 408 casualties. The soldiers there showed tremendous bravery. There was a story of one soldier who was severely wounded. He stayed behind and refused medical treatment to run the artillery fire there, even though he had maggots in his wounds. And when the wounded were captured by the North Koreans, the Puerto Rican troops could see them being mistreated on the other side of the hill. And then just weeks after Kelly Hill, they were sent on another hopeless mission to Jackson Heights with no military, no engineering, or medical support. They held the position for several days, surrounded and outnumbered, but they were later driven back with half of the company killed or wounded, Noemi. And then they were ordered to attack again, and that's when some of them refused to go.
That's right. almost 100 men were eventually arrested. But it was three separate incidents. The first one was on October 28th, and about 40 men were arrested. The following day, they sent a different company to try to take over Jackson Heights, but they abandoned the hill without orders. I think it was 35 who were arrested. And then a couple of days later, there was another incident with a company L where they refused the order of an inexperienced officer because they were lost, and they were arrested. So there were court marshals involved.
If you look back at what happened, how poorly fortified the positions were, the fact that there was no cover for the men, mm-hmm. they were on a barren hillside being shelled by a numerically superior North Korean army backed by hundreds of thousands of Chinese troops. You can't help but think that they were being sent up there to be slaughtered.
Well, I think many times, especially during that time of the war, what they were doing was just trying to keep terrain, and they were being sent to defend these hills that were in enemy territory. What made Jackson Heights unique was that it was completely made of rock. And the regular soldier, the way he takes cover is he digs for trenches. You couldn't dig for trench. Then you had the enemy in a higher ground. And I think that the higher ups were not aware of this. They were kept sending them back, not realizing that it was a suicide mission.
And was there a language problem, too? You had officers who spoke English and soldiers who spoke Spanish?
By then, not when the 65th first arrived, but by then, the rotation program had removed a lot of the seasoned officers with experience. They had a lack of NCOs. Many of the rank-and-file soldiers were replacements from the National Guard units with not as much experience. Many of them only spoke Spanish. There was a lot of issues to make this thing boil over to the point that it got.
And the end result was 96 of them got court-martials. 84 were convicted. Their charges ranging from desertion to failure to follow orders. There's a line from your documentary. To call a proven warrior a coward will affect you for the rest of your life.
Absolutely, yeah. You have to remember what it meant. 65th was the pride of Puerto Rico. And many of these soldiers that had gotten arrested wrote back to their parents and told them what had happened. And the parents would not accept the charges of cowardice. And they pressured the government of Puerto Rico to get involved and to hire lawyers for the appeals. So upon the pressure of all this, because the Army tried to keep it quiet, but the news started to come out, and during the appeal process, by then they had served, most of them had served about 6 months in jail. So the Secretary of the Army canceled their sentences because some of them got very, very harsh sentences, 16, 18 years, 10 years. So it was the darkest hour in the history of the 65th.
And then 60 years later, they were given the Congressional Medal of Honor.
And the 60 years.
Today on Route 51, it's a special Veterans Day show with the Barrinconeers, the all-Hispanic infantry unit from the Korean War. Our guests today, Sergeant Major Victor Lopez Nieves and Cesar Antonio Pabon Perez, veterans of the 65th, and Noemi Figueroa Sule, who produced and directed and wrote the documentary. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to take a short break. Here's Lulu Bell and Scotty with a song that was popular on the country music charts during the Korean War.
We're living in a country that's the finest place on earth, but some folks don't appreciate this land that gave them birth. I hear that up in Washington they're having an awful fuss, 'cause communists and spies were making monkeys out of us.
I'm no communist, I'll tell you that right now. I believe a man should own his own house and car and cow.
I like this private ownership, I want to be left alone.
Let the government run its business and let me run my own.
Support for WPR comes from Titletown Brewing Company in Green Bay, now offering a variety of bottled beers throughout Wisconsin. More about their beers, historic facilities, and newly renovated brewery is at TitletownBrewing.com. Support also comes from the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, presenting the 2017 Birds in Art exhibition, with all new artwork by 114 artists through November 26th. LYWAM.org.
I'm so glad at last there's peace in Korea. Yes, I'm so glad at last there's peace. peace and career. Don't you know, I'm so glad at last there's peace in Korea. Because President Eisenhower has done just what he said.
That's Sister Rosetta Tharpe taking us into our final segment of Route 51 with our guests today, Sergeant Major Victor Lopez Nieves and Cesar Antonio Pabon Perez, and also documentary producer Noemi Figueroa Sule, talking about the documentary film and the service of the Borinqueneers. I want to get the reaction of you, Victor, to the fact that after all of these years, you got the Congressional Medal of Honor, and you had a storied military career. It was, what, 27 years that you were in the military, Victor, and to finally get the Congressional Medal of Honor must have been a wonderful thing.
Are you talking to me, Victor?
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's not the Congressional Medal of Honor. It's the Congressional Gold Medal.
That's what I meant to say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's a big difference on that one. Well, it feels great. You know, I, after 60 years, you know, it's very difficult for a person, you know, to remember and to really appreciate what happened during that early years of your life. And I feel really, you know, felt really proud, you know, when I was called, you know, by Noemi and by others that we were being considered to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. And I'm proud, very proud to have been able, you know, to get this medal. Not too many people, you know, get to have it. Maybe they deserve it.
And,
but, yes, I'm really proud about that.
And Cesar, your reflections on getting that Congressional Gold Medal?
Well, that hurt me a lot because when they went to interview me from a person from the veteran BAW, he told me, you know, ask some questions. You know about the Congressional Gold Medal that you're going to get. They didn't know nothing. But then later he gave me more information. But that one was a step for other benefits that I didn't have because in that time he sent me to the VA, started going in different interviews, and they found out that I was supposed to get some compensation for my problem when I came back from Korea. And both things came at the same time. I feel proud to be part of the 65th Infantry, part of the United States Army, but at the same time proud of those that were fighting for our benefits.
Noemi, we're down to our last minute. You folks went back to Korea very quickly. Tell
September.
Us about that.
Yeah, we went back with a group of 15 veterans. 13 of them were Borinqueneers. Cesar and Victor went on that trip. So really, they should tell you what their impression was, because you got to remember when they left that country, it was war ravaged. And what they found was a modern democratic country.
Cesar?
Well, for me, that was really impressive. Especially for the people, were with us, they were educated, they spoke Spanish also, and they treat us like kings, you know, and whatever we were walking, whatever, they came with the sign of victory, and they said, you know, you are important in this country, and you are visiting something that you help to us to change our life.
Cesar, Victor, and Noemi, we're completely out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We read in the newspapers, hear on the radio, they're fighting in Korea. The boys are called to go to meet the enemy as it comes across the line. God, please protect America in this troubled time. Oh, people, let's start praying as we never prayed before. We need the hand of God to lead us through this war. Give us victory in Korea and save our voice so fine.
We want to thank today's guests, Sergeant Major Victor Lopez Nieves and Cesar Antonio Pabon Perez and Noemi Figueroa Soleil. Thanks also to Colin Hansen of Edgar Elementary School and the Walk in Their Shoes School History Program. If you want to find out more about the Barrinconeers and the documentary, visit Barrinconeers.com. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our show producer and on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Harry Schultz, Quarteto Mayari, Noel Estrada, Daniel Santos, Lulabell and Scotty, Sister Rosetta Tharp, and Jimmy Osborne. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we are heading out of town.